Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Patrick, the compulsive overeater from, and I think Patrick said he was from Minnesota. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, Donna. And thank you all for the invitation to share my experience, strength, and hope on the meeting tonight. You know, I was thinking about the name of the meeting, There Is a Solution, I want you to know that if you're returning or if you're brand new, that's exactly what we have here. You are looking at a man who has released over 200 pounds, put his type 2 diabetes in full remission, no longer requiring medication as a result of the recovery that I found in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And by following the directions in the Big Book. My pathway to Overeaters Anonymous began in another 12-step fellowship, but compulsive overeating has always been an issue for me. I realized when I came into OA after spending 11 years in what we like to call the beverage fellowship, of which I'm still a responsible member, is that food had been my first mood altering substance. And that what I found out in my work and in my recovery is that food isn't a problem. It is a problem when I consume certain things, certain ingredients trigger my physical allergy. The physical allergy is described in the doctor's opinion in the front of the Big Book. And if you're new here and you're not sure what the Big Book is, we use the book Alcoholics Anonymous to recover in Overeaters Anonymous. We also, some meetings in some spaces, we also use literature from Overeaters Anonymous. If you're wondering why we use the book, it's just the original recipe for working the 12 steps. And the 12 steps have been found to be effective on many, many levels for recovery from addiction. Many, many fellowships around the world use the 12 steps. Alcoholics Anonymous is where the 12 steps were formed and were formed in the directions in the Big Book. In the first 164 pages are where you can find that recovery. You know, sometimes that can be a sticking point for people. Well, I'm not an alcoholic. Well, I would ask you is what you're doing with food, what an alcoholic would do with alcohol. Because what I was doing with food was definitely eating alcoholically. I would start to eat and I couldn't stop. And that was always my problem. You know, I was addicted to sugar when I was a little kid. I didn't know it. I'm the guy that I would go find the chocolate chips that my mother had stashed for baking cookies, and I'd eat the whole bag. And I'd go to quite some lengths. She started stashing those way at the top of a cupboard, way in the back. And I'd put a chair next to the cupboard, and I'd put a box on the chair, and then I'd get on the cupboard and I'd climb the shelves to get to the chocolate chips, and they'd find me on the kitchen floor smeared in chocolate. And they thought I was just a mischievous kid, but what I'll report to you is that what I know now is I was already experiencing the allergy, that when I begin to consume chocolate and sugar, I can't stop. I have no off button. I think they're commonly known as trigger foods here. And so, you know, I was always an overweight kid, right? But I discovered beverage alcohol at 13 years old, and I was an off the cliff alcoholic. I dropped out of school a year later. I was a daily drinker by the time I was 16, and I had a 31 year drinking career that nearly killed me. Now, interspersed with that drinking career was binge eating. I would cure my hangovers by binge eating. And you know what I found out through recovery and using the big book to recover both from my alcoholism and my compulsive overeating is that what I suffer from is a spiritual malady. I have an internal dialogue that demands that the way I feel change. Right. And the best description that I found of that spiritual malady is on page 52 of the big book, in the middle paragraph. And I just want to read this here. And if you're new here or coming back, just ask yourself if these questions are ringing a bell with your current state of being. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. Notice it doesn't say my food problem or my alcohol problem. It says my human problems. Were we having trouble with personal relationships? We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. It was not a basic solution of these bedevilments. Interesting choice of words there. More important than whether we should see newsreel of lunar flight, which is a reference to the previous paragraph. Ask yourself, you know, what is the state of your personal relationship, particularly the one you have with yourself? Because what I now know, being in recovery for you know, my abstinence date and Overeaters Anonymous is my current black and white back-to-back abstinence date is August 26th of 2020. I have been in Overeaters Anonymous since 2015, so I know what it's like to come back, okay? I've had two very short relapses. Fortunately, both of them only lasted one day. And both of them were much more related to me being an extreme example of self-will run riot, like the book says, than anything else. I wasn't triggered by anything. I just refused to follow the program. I refused to follow my food plan, which led to a relapse. And I do want to say at the beginning of this, if you're new or coming back, that you know, the big book tells us that a man's brain should be cleared before spiritual measures are taken. I'm a firm believer in the fact that you have to be, that abstinence needs to begin by putting the food down. We got to put the food down. It's really hard to have a spiritual experience if you don't put the food down. You know, it's really hard for an alcoholic to get sober if he doesn't quit drinking. Well, it's really hard for a compulsive overeater to stop overeating if they don't stop overeating or undereating or whatever manifestation of this malady that you have. I know that not everybody's problem is too much food. I know that some people come to this fellowship because their problem is not enough food. My sponsor happens to be an recovering anorexic bulimic. So, you know, and I'm the classic compulsive overeater. At 55 years old, I was well over 400 pounds, dying of type 2 diabetes after having put on 150 pounds after a triple bypass on my heart from the damage I had done to myself with alcohol. I'm familiar with the dark last half of this disease. As I sit in this chair right here, I have chronic neuropathy in both my legs. I can't feel them both, basically from the knee down. Parts of my feet are missing. they're in a jar. You know, they went in a jar after the surgeries I had to have because of the abscesses I got on my feet caused by the type 2 that I created by being a compulsive overeater. So I'm talking to you from a position of experience, not opinion. And I like to ask people all the time in this thing, is it possible you're in more trouble than you think you are? And what if your assessment of your current condition is incorrect? And is it possible that what's gotten between you and recovery is an opinion about an experience you haven't had yet? In the big book, in Spiritual Experience, in the back of the book, there's a little thing at the end of Spiritual Experience that says the thing that can prevent us from you know, is contempt prior to investigation. That's certainly what was killing me as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 11 years of sobriety from alcohol, telling you that I was living a spiritual life. I was 405 pounds dying of type 2 diabetes, telling you all was well. The big book talks about an extreme example of self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Guilty. If not for a responsible recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous who 12-stepped me at the International AA Convention in 2015 in Atlanta, somebody just like many of the members here, you'd have a different speaker tonight. She was willing to punch through my well-honed recovery ego and my sensitive, you know, defensive self and tell me that the reason that I was suffering was that I was full of BS. That I was resisting a known repeatable solution, willfully disregarding a known repeatable solution to my overeating problem, and that I had known about it for years because she knew I'd known about it for years. I'd done a drive-by in OA in 2008 and 2009. And when I mean a drive-by, I mean a drive-by. In one instance, I sat outside of the parking lot of a meeting. In the other instance, I went to one meeting and said, you know, and there some people talked about weighing and measuring food and having a plan from a nutritionist. And all of this, I said, wow, that sounded like voodoo to me. And it's what I do every day now. I weigh and measure every morsel of food that goes in my mouth. I have a plan for my nutritionist that I report to my sponsor on a daily basis. And if that sounds like it's going to be too much work, what's it been like for you on the way in the door? See, I'm a guy that's going to ask the hard questions because they have to be asked, unless we're going to sign off on watching each other die. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in late 2003, December 23rd of 2003 is my sobriety date from alcohol. And I took to AA pretty strongly. I really enjoyed it. And I did well for about the first 4 or 5 years. I came in at about 240 pounds, which was probably 50 to 60 pounds overweight for where I should be. I was borderline morbidly obese, but very quickly sugar took over. And I began to gain weight almost immediately. And at 5 years sober, I took alcohol to the brink of death as well. I was having heart attacks during DTs and walking out of liquor stores or walking out of emergency rooms and intensive care wards and into liquor stores. So when the big book tells me that I might be living in a delusional state of mind, I tend to believe it now. But it took me being beaten into a sense of reasonableness, as the big book says, for that to occur. And here's the problem with that. My family had to watch. So when I'm flipping the coin on whether or not I should come into Overeaters Anonymous, the people that watched me, that had to watch me almost kill myself with alcohol, are now having to watch me almost kill myself with cookies. This disease has a unique ability to harm the people around us, even though we will claim we are only hurting ourselves. The Big Book talks about selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. It's in the run-up to step three. And it certainly was the root of my problem. All I thought about was my own comfort and the reward that food would give me whenever I was a problem. And what I found out by working the steps in Overeaters Anonymous with a responsible recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous was this. Yes, I have an addiction to food, but you put the food down, and what my addiction is that I believe I shouldn't feel the way I feel. I'm addicted to the idea that my life should be comfortable. And my sponsor asked me a question. She asked me, "What good has seeking comfort done for you?" Whoa, wait a minute, wait, whoa, whoa, Patrick, whoa, wait, whoa, hold the phone here. I just wanted to stop eating. Eating is a symptom. My compulsive overeating was a symptom of a deeper spiritual malady that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in this book treat. I don't have a food problem. I have a spiritual malady. My problem is that I think food is a solution, and it's not. So in spite of the detrimental effects it was having on my health, and here's what I found out. I worked the steps hard in AA. I did. I sponsored people. I did everything you're supposed to do, but I was still suffering. And what I found out is that until I addressed the overeating, right, that a healthy spirit can't live in a sick temple. Let me say that again. A healthy spirit can't live in a sick temple. If for me, what authentic recovery looks like is mind, body, and spirit all traveling in the same general direction. And it was you guys who at 50, I didn't learn how to begin to take care of myself until I was 55 years old. I'd grown up in an alcoholic home. I was witness to and victim of things that no child should be witness to or victim of. And you can let your head run to all the dark spaces with that. I wish that's why I was an alcoholic compulsive overeater. It's not. I'm an alcoholic compulsive overeater because the Big Book tells me very clearly in the doctor's opinion that I have a mental obsession and a physical allergy to certain substances, one of them being beverage alcohol, the other two, particularly in my case, being white sugar, refined sugar, and white flour. There are some others too. One of my relapses was I went on a cashew binge. Well, check the cashews off the list. And by the way, that was in a hospital room when I was about to have pieces of my feet amputated. I had refused to make a call on a food change for my metabolic snack. I just ate it without even thinking about it. Typically, I ask my sponsor, "Hey, the hospital didn't have what I needed. Is it okay to change this?" Off to the races I went. That's how I roll. That's the level my disease is at. If I'm not accountable about what's going in my mouth at a high level on a daily basis, I don't have the capacity to make those decisions. I got real clear on step one experientially. I don't have the capacity to manage what I eat by myself. I desperately need help. And I have an ego that is desperately attached to the idea that I don't need that help. And that's a fatal combination in my case, because it walks me out into the physical condition that it walked me out into. So at 5 years sober, I had a triple bypass due to the damage I'd done to my heart with alcohol and, you know, a myriad of other substances, but mostly alcohol. Now, mind you, I'm only 49 years old and I'm having a triple bypass. That's not normal. Bypasses are typically done on people that are much older. I remember very clearly in the recovery room from that, you know, I was waking up in the cardiac intensive care ward and post-surgery. And I remember very clearly thinking, well, I've kind of got a clean bill of health here. I can eat whatever I want. And in the next 6 years, I put on 150 pounds. I don't know any cardiologists that recommend putting on 150 pounds as a recovery process from a triple bypass.
Patrick, that's 20 minutes.
Thank you. So what I want you to understand is that what you're looking at on this screen and what you're hearing speak to you is nothing short of a wholesale miracle brought to you by the 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous, a relationship with a power greater than myself, a food plan, an OA sponsor, and a disciplined way of life in steps 10, 11, and 12. After I did the first nine. I'm not supposed to be your speaker tonight. If life were linear, if life were logical, if life were fair, Patrick's not around. The chances of me surviving what I've survived, two types of fatal addiction, in the physical condition that you see me on. And here's what I'll report to you, that at 63 years old, I just had my annual round of doctor's visits. They did every blood test you can do on a human being I've had done in the last 3 months, and every single one of them is in the normal range. And I don't take medication for my diabetes anymore. I haven't for years. I take a small amount of a blood pressure pill because as a bypass patient, that's required for life. There are a couple of medications that I have to take for the rest of my life to help my heart, but that's all I take. So through nutrition, through a food plan that I got through to a nutritionist that I'm accountable to a sponsor, my health, I'm in the best health I've been in 40 years at 63 years old. Lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, and I found that power in Overeaters Anonymous. And I found that power by working the steps. That's another quote from We Agnostics. If you can't tell, We Agnostics is a pretty important chapter in Patrick's life. Because I wasn't going to come to believe that a power greater than Patrick could do anything in my life. And then I read further on and I found out that I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. I live in a delusional state of mind that I can manage my condition. That if I parrot the program, if I show up in a meeting and I look good and I do everything except actually live a spiritual life, prayer and meditation, carrying the message, being willing to sponsor newcomers, which by the way, my roster is currently filled. I've been given the hard stop by my sponsor, so I can't take on any new people, but I'm always happy to take calls and talk about recovery and be helpful, right? I'll be helpful however I can. So I'm at that convention in 2015. I'm 405 pounds. I can walk maybe 500 to 700 feet. My blood sugars are typically running in the 300 to 400 range by this time. I'm taking the maximum dose of metformin that you can take. they're telling me that when I come back from that convention, I'm probably going to go on insulin. And I'm sitting on a bench because I'm tired. My back is locking up and my knees are sore and my feet are killing me. By this time, the neuropathy had begun in my feet, so they were tingly and on fire most of the time. And I just finished a big pizza. And I'm sitting on this bench, and this couple who had seen me speak at an AA seminars saw me, and we were what I would call acquaintances. And I'm sitting on this bench, and they come over and say hello, and I get up and give them a hug, and I sit back down, and she looks at him and says, "Hey, go get us a cup of coffee." And he looks at her and says, "You're crazy. The lines at the coffee stations are an hour long. There's 60,000 people at this international AA convention in Atlanta. It happens every 5 years, and there's always 50 or 60,000 people there. It's a wonderful deal," which I couldn't enjoy, by the way, because I couldn't get around. The Atlanta Convention Center is huge, so I was kind of restricted to one small space. So I'm sitting on that bench, and she looks at him and says, "Go get us some coffee," in the wifey voice. You know the one. Some of you do. And he says, okay. And he goes. And she sits down next to me, and asks me how I'm doing. And I give her the standard, "Hey, I'm great. You know, I'm fine. I'm fine." Right? Because that's my answer if you ask me how I'm doing. "I'm fine." I yell at you that I'm fine because I'm anything but. What I am is deathly afraid that somebody's going to see into me and what I'm doing with food, because you're not going to take it away from me. And she had seen into me already. The last time she had saw me, I'd probably put on 100 pounds since then. So she grabs me by the hand and says, "Patrick, how you doing?" And I said, "I'm fine. Isn't this great? Isn't the convention great?" I'm trying to deflect and defend. And she squeezes my hand and looks me right in the eye and says, "Patrick, you're full of shit. You're dying." And as a responsible recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous, I can't let that happen without trying to tell you the life-saving message that I found in that fellowship. And she proceeded to 12-step me and tell me her story. She'd always had a prosthetic leg. I had never asked how you got one, because that ain't a question that you ask somebody. But it turned out that at about 5'2", she'd weighed well over 300 pounds at one time and had lost her leg to type 2 diabetes. And when I saw her, she was about, you know, she was in appropriate weight and in good physical condition. And her eyes were the brightest things I've ever seen in my life. And she gave me her phone number. We talked for a while, and I told her some of the things that I had been experiencing. And she said, I think the fellowship would be good. So I went home and did what any good compulsive overeater would do. I immediately went to the refrigerator and binge ate for about a month, because nobody's going to put baby in a corner. But then one Sunday, I woke up with a mustard seed of willingness, and I went to a Overeaters Anonymous meeting, face-to-face meeting here in Minneapolis, or down in Minneapolis. And it was a mile and a half from my house. So I had to travel, you know, over 4,000 miles back and forth to Atlanta to be 12-stepped. Now, mind you, if you're struggling with the idea that you got this thing, or that it's some sort of an aberration, I got 12-stepped into another 12-step fellowship at a 12-step convention 3,000 miles away from my house, only to end up in my home group, which is a mile and a half from my house. Yeah. Right. So I went to that home group, and the first thing that happened to me in that meeting was I got a hug. And the second thing that happened was that after the meeting, a man came up to me and asked me a very rude question. And that question was, "Hey, what are you going to have for breakfast?" And for the first time in my life, I said, I don't know. What do you think? And he gave me the breakfast he ate off his food plan. And he said, why don't you start with this? And here's my nutritionist number. She'd love to talk to you. Why don't you give her a call tomorrow and set up an appointment? And in the meantime, I'll help you meal by meal. And she grabbed me by the hand. He grabbed me by the hand and he said, you can, or by the arm. And he said, you can do this. And he did. He helped me eat. I didn't know what to eat. I have known what to eat since I was a kid. I literally didn't know how to do abstinence. I didn't even know what you called it. I didn't even know I was abstinent until I was a week abstinent. I didn't know that's what you called it. He asked me that when I called him one Saturday, he said, how does it feel to have your first week of abstinence in? And I said, is that what you call it? He said, yeah, that's what we call our sobriety in Overeaters Anonymous, abstinence. I said, I don't know, feels pretty good. I haven't really thought about overeating since you started helping me. And I hadn't been able to release the obsession with food for years. What a gift. So we went through the steps, and what I found out was the contempt I had prior to investigation was that I had been trying to solve my problem in another fellowship and the credits don't transfer. What I needed was, I needed to be able to identify with other food addicts and compulsive overeaters. And I needed the help, the actual help with the food, because it was different. I have to eat. And particularly in my case, as a then actively type 2 diabetic, I needed to be able to eat well, right? And so the amount of food that I actually eat now is more than I ever ate when I was compulsively overeating. But because it's the right foods, right, I get to eat 6 times a day. That's to keep my sugars right. I eat 3 meals and 3 snacks. And I get to eat foods that are wonderful, right?
1 minute.
Thank you. They're the right amounts, right? And I can tell you that for the first time in my life, as a result of working the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in Overeaters Anonymous, that I have what I would like to report to you now as authentic recovery. And if you're not sure what that looks like, you can talk to my family. I have great relationships. I completed a master's as a result of being abstinent in this thing. I couldn't get that done while I was overeating. I got it done now. I've got the job I've always wanted. I have relationships with people all over the world as a result of my membership in this fellowship and this Hollywood Squares things that we do, right? I get to laugh. I got to go out to LA and speak at the OA birthday party 3 weeks ago. What a gas, 850 people there. What a beautiful thing that was. I live a life that I couldn't begin to imagine when I was sitting on that bench in Atlanta. And I'll be forever grateful for the responsible recovered member of this fellowship who had the courage to punch through that ego of mine and tell me the truth about the grave nature of my condition and the path to recovery that was available in this fellowship. Karen, how much time?
It was 1 minute, so
okay. Then I'm going to pass.
Yeah,
because you'll have. Otherwise, you're going to have to say, Patrick, shut up. So.